to heal their sick. Began to heal them. And as the day wore on and he was being a doctor to these people, they discovered that their stomachs were growling and they were hungry. And the disciples noticed this. And so they wanted to take care of the hungry. Well, they wanted to send them out into the city to get some food to eat. But Jesus said, no, let's take care of them. So we know that being around Jesus was a life full of adventure. People were drawn to him. He was never in isolation, never could seem to be alone. And amazing things happened when he was around. And to be associated with him had to be thrilling. And in this story here, Jesus feeds a crowd of 5,000 men, plus women and children. He used 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. And when all these people had eaten, how much did he gather up afterwards? What was that? 12 baskets of food. He started with less than he ended up with. And after everybody ate. What an amazing thing to be around. And now, after this all happened, Jesus made his disciples get in the boat to go ahead to the other side, to Capernaum, so Jesus could be alone again and grieve over the death of John. So they got in the boat. They went to started off to sail over to Capernaum. The wind came up. They had a hard time making headway. Jesus finished his time alone in prayer and decided he was going to go catch up. He knew they were still out on the water, though, so Jesus walked on the water. And as he approached them, there's a storm, it's dark. It says it was, I think the reading was in the fourth hour or something. I think the version I have says just around dawn. So they've been out in this boat all night. The weather's been kind of severe. And all of a sudden they see someone walking on the water. They were afraid. This is crazy, because people don't walk on water. And I think that as they saw him, he said, do not be afraid, for it is I. And Peter's response was, Lord, if it is you, bid me to come. And Jesus said, come. So Peter did whatever every sane individual would do. Got out of the boat and walked towards Jesus. And he actually walked on the water until something happened and he began to sink. He began to sink. And what I want to talk to you about today is, why does sometimes Jesus let us sink? I mean, they had just experienced all these amazing things, the feeding of all the people with just a few pieces of fish and bread, with more left over, people being cured of diseases. Lame, we assume lame could walk, and we know that there were other diseases that were common among those people in those days that made them to be outcast, and Jesus healed them. All these amazing things happen, up to the point even of Peter defying the laws of physics and walking on the water. But he began to sink. Why does Jesus let us sink sometimes? Now, I don't know if this is the same event that John talks about in chapter 6 of his book, but if it is, it was prior to Jesus telling his apostles in John the 16th chapter. He says, in this world, you will have tribulation. See, sometimes I think Jesus does so many amazing things. God works through him to do all these incredible things that there really is no explanation for scientifically, other than that they're miracles. Why does he not keep us from experiencing tribulation? Again, Jesus says, in the world you will have tribulation, but be of good cheer, for I have overcome the world. Another thing that is puzzling is the apostles didn't decide to get in the boat. Jesus told them to get in the boat and go to the other side. They were following instructions. They were doing what Jesus had told them to do, but yet they ran into some trouble. I got to thinking about the weather there on the Sea of Galilee, and I did a little research on it. I had been there once, quite a number of years ago, and I didn't remember the geography of the area, but the Sea of Galilee actually sits 700 feet below sea level. It's a low spot, and not too far from there is the lowest spot on Earth that's not in the ocean, called the Dead Sea, which is even further below sea level than that. But along the sides of the sea, there are walls. It's like it's in a... Have you ever been to a Crater Lake? Only deeper down. And so when the wind does come up, it blows. It has nowhere to go, but it has to scream across this lake. And in this case, it was going against them. It gave them headwinds. So they were struggling to get by. Now, I'm sure with these, Peter and the others, they were fishermen, many of them. So the storms was not too much for them to address. But when someone came walking on the water, that was a little bit too much. But the apostles did exactly what Jesus asked them to do, told them to do, and they walked right into a headwind, a storm. Now I've come to discover that my faith only grows at the level of the conflict that I face. When I'm faced with conflict, I have to make a decision. What am I going to do with it? But one thing I do know is I can always count on my faith being tested. My faith will be tested. And that's what happened here on this boat. Their faith was tested. Conventional wisdom says, don't go overboard, especially in a storm. Maybe we've all been on boats, perhaps, like to get over the side, do a little swimming around, cool off. But I've never done that in a storm. But Peter had the experience of a lifetime because he dared to go overboard. And while it's easy to criticize him for sinking, how many of the other ones took the chance and got out of the boat? None of them. And no one else that we know of, other than Jesus, has ever really walked on water. The other disciples stayed in the security of the ship. And it's easy for us to sit in comfort and criticize those who attempt things. It's easy to look out and say, why did they do that? And sometimes they fail. But they tried. They tried to do something for God. Fear says it's too risky to venture beyond the confines of what we understand. And I'm that way. When I face things, I want to understand it. When my kids face troubles, I want to understand it. I want to understand what it is that's happening. When challenges arise, I want to understand why. But God does not always explain things. And sometimes we have no way to understand. Because I will tell you right now, as advanced as we are, I still have no idea how Peter walked on the water. It's not scientifically possible. But sometimes we need to step outside of our comfort zone and see where God leads us. And I'm not suggesting we ignore the laws of physics, because God put the laws of physics there, and they are for our protection as well as for the comfort of our life. But Peter has just witnessed all these amazing things, the feeding of 5,000, the healing of ill and sick. He had just seen Jesus walk on the water. He thought perhaps he could do it too. Do you think his friends in the boat were shocked that he could walk on the water? The Bible doesn't say how far he went before he took his eyes off Jesus. But then he began to sink. Which again begs the questions, why did Jesus let him sink? Obviously he was focused on something else. Perhaps it was the wind. Perhaps it was the waves. I'm sure Peter was a good swimmer. But all of a sudden he was in way over his head. Peter said, he looked around at the high waves and he was terrified. He began to sink. He said, "Save me, Lord. Save me." And instantly Jesus reached out his hand and rescued him. So why did Jesus allow Peter to sink? I think Jesus allowed Peter to sink so that he would realize how much he needed him. I know that I have many flaws in my own life. And my wife's not shaking her head, so that's good. But one of them, one thing that I've fought my whole life is the sin of pride. I would call it arrogance. And there are many things that I think I can resolve and do. There's many challenges that I think I can overcome. And when we're caught up in pride, it's hard to think that I need God in my life. Peter was involved in many great things. By association, people knew who he was because Jesus was well known and popular. I can't understand for a minute what made Peter think that he could walk on the water. But he did. He asked Jesus to tell him to come, and he did. He walked on water. Perhaps Peter was a little too proud. Perhaps Jesus needed to let him sink so he could realize that without me, you are nothing. In John, the 15th chapter, Jesus kind of talks about this. He tells his followers, "I am the vine and you are the branches. He who abides in me bears much fruit. For without me, you can do nothing." Without me, you can do nothing. One of Satan's biggest lies and one of man's biggest deceptions is to presume that we can live and make it apart from God. Oh, sometimes we do really well. Sometimes we do fine. So we see people out there that don't appear to have God. They seem to do okay. But the tragedy of today's world, it seems that there's more and more people that live in despair. I'm saddened by the Perez family lost their little nephew to suicide. That's tragic. What is it that causes people to lose their desire to live? I think another reason God will let us sink is He is preparing us to rescue others. Sometimes it's hard to see people who are in trouble if we haven't been in trouble ourselves. Sometimes it's hard to see when someone's drowning. Now, I know we have a couple of lifeguard Jake here. I think one of the things they teach you is what it looks like when someone's drowning. Because I've been at the pool. I swim a couple times a week, and I've seen people that swim that look like they're drowning. But there has to be a certain way that they look when they're drowning. Otherwise, you get in the pool and you've made a fool of yourself. But I think God will let us sink to prepare us to rescue others. In Luke 22, Jesus tells Peter, who had betrayed him. Peter betrayed Jesus and then sunk into his own despair from doing it. And Jesus tells him, "I have prayed for you that your faith should not fail. And when you have returned to me, strengthen your brethren." He knew Peter had struggled, that Peter had lost his faith. Jesus had been crucified. Peter had denied knowing him. But yet Jesus came to him and said, "I prayed for you that your faith might be strengthened so that in a time of need you can strengthen others." Jesus allowed Peter to fail, and by overcoming that negative experience, he emerged with a stronger faith. And afterwards, he was able to relate to others with more compassion and help them overcome by God's grace. Peter's prayer was not a big prayer. Peter's prayer was not full of big words. It wasn't elaborate and confusing. He just said, "Lord, save me. Lord, save me." At that moment, Peter knew how much he needed a Savior. And we should too, because we can't save ourselves. We not only need Jesus to save our souls from sin, but to save us from the negative situations of life. We all should pray, "Lord, save me." In Psalms, the 20th chapter, verse 17, David writes, "Some take pride in chariots, and some in horses. But our pride is in the name of the Lord, our God." David knew that he needed God. It didn't matter how many chariots he might have or how many chariots the enemy might have. It didn't matter how many horses the enemy might have or he had. He knew that the only way to victory was with God. And to you young people, and at my age, I don't know what young is anymore. But if you feel young, I'm talking to you. There's only one way you can be saved from the spiritual challenges that will be in your life. And you will face them. I know as a parent, we tried to protect our kids from so many things. We tried to protect them from mean people. We tried to protect them from having their confidence crushed. We tried to protect them from all sorts of circumstances. And you know, for a lot of part, you can do that. But it gets a point, every child gets to the point when a parent can no longer protect them. They're on their own. They're out there in the world. And Satan is out there trying to challenge them and to get them to think poorly about themselves or do things they shouldn't do or engage in activities they shouldn't. But there's only one that can save you in the spiritual challenges you face, and that's God. That's God. In John 13:13, Jesus says, "You call me teacher and Lord, and you are right, for that is what I am." But my question for each of us is he? Is he teacher, and is he the Lord of me? Is he the teacher, and is he the Lord of you? Unfortunately, teacher and master and Lord, they have little place in our vocabulary. We become masters of our own lives. We become masters of our own destiny. We become lords of our own castles. But as Peter found out, at some point, you're going to sink. You're going to sink. It's inevitable. Because Satan is alive and well in this world. He's active. So where do you put your confidence? Where do you put your trust? As we've learned this week, it's hard to trust Google anymore. Where do we put our confidence? That's a question each of us we must ask and answer ourselves. For there is no other way to get the answer. Sometimes life gives us big challenges. And with big challenges comes a necessity for big faith. I pray that our faith will be that strong. But if it's not, we have Peter's prayer. "Lord, save me. Save me." I hope that we can encourage one another. I hope we can pray for one another. I hope that we can, in our walk each day, bear in mind and keep in mind those that are struggling. Lord, save us. If that is your prayer, if that is your need, I know that the power of the righteous is powerful. And I say with confidence, there are a few righteous people here today. And if you crave the prayers of that, we ask that you would come forward as we sing the song that's been chosen.